You're listening to The Training Dummies. With Rob.
Hot singles in your area looking for jobs.
And Daryl.
Yeah, weak chorus are for the weak.
Greetings and welcome to episode number 105 of the Training Dummies podcast, recorded for you on September 17th, 2015. My name is Rob and I am super old. Like, super old.
You are officially really old.
Yeah, but you're older than me, so it's alright.
Right now, we're the exact same age for, like, two more weeks.
And this even super older than me guy talking right now is my bro host all the way up.
No, Canada. We're the same age. Same age.
Canada. It's you're in a different time zone, so I think that...
So that makes you older, then. Because it's 10 o'clock there.
Wait. Can't I, like, be from the future or
right.
Joining us tonight, we are going to do another Heroes of the Storm episode. I was perusing the Reddit Heroes of the Storm section and bumped into Carl, who had written some amazing posts, just kind of highlighting some strategies and really how to make the most out of your game, and it was super cool, and I loved it, and I reached out to Carl, and I said, Carl the Llama, will you please come on the show? And he said, yes, I will, and here we are. So let's give a big round of applause for Carl the Llama. Thank you, Carl.
Thank you for having me.
I don't know if that was a witty Carl intro or not, but...
Good enough for a dirty llama.
That's awesome. So we'll do our little interview. We'll get to know Carl the Llama a little bit, and then we'll talk about Heroes of the Storm. I'm excited. I've been playing a stupid amount of Heroes of the Storm lately, and I feel like I'm not getting any better at it because I keep going in and just doing things that aren't really helpful. I played on a basic, like the easiest AI mode for a little while, and that certainly didn't help me get any better at the game, but I think it's time to step up. I know Daryl's been out of game a little bit. I haven't seen you in Heroes very much lately.
I've been doing other stuff in Warcraft, so.
Been flying around Tanan.
Exactly. Need those Apexis crystals.
No, you don't.
Yeah, I do.
So, Carl, when did you start playing Heroes, and what would you say is your favorite hero to play?
I started playing Heroes in November of 2014. I'd played, kind of my gaming history was I Brood War was the game that I first really got into and played a lot of, but I didn't play Melee, I played the custom maps there. And so, you know, you'd play multiple different genres, it wasn't like just one type of game. And then when I got to college, the internet there was weird and they had Brood War firewalled off, but StarCraft II was able to get through. And I played, the StarCraft II MOBA, and from there I transitioned to League, played League for a long time, got like 6K or 8K games in there. And then I just salted out of that game because I never really enjoyed it. I played it because I got good in the Brood War games, and like, I was really proud of that fact that like, I was very good at those games, but nobody played them. Like, it was a very small community, so I wanted to like, prove that I was good at a game that everybody played, right? I don't know if it was a bad decision, but it was definitely not a fun decision. But it ultimately led me to Heroes. I quit League and then a couple months later got Heroes access. Love the game, and am doing well with it. And so that's like how I got into it, why I got into it, just cause fun and I like to win. And yeah, November of 2014. Favorite champion to play is Brightwing. She's gone through some rough balance changes recently, but I think she's back in style. And so it's safe saying that she's my favorite again.
Awesome.
Cool. What is the origin of the name Carl the Llama?
So, while I played a lot of Brood War in high school, the rest, like geek culture and like interneting in general, I didn't do a ton of. I was very into athletics and whatnot. And so when I got to college, the friend group that I settled on at that point was much more into geeky, nerdy stuff. And one of them, was a big fan of showing internet videos to the rest of us, and one of them was Llamas with Hats, and I just loved it. And it wasn't much after that point that I got my StarCraft II account. And when I make account names, I tend to make them different for each game, but when I make account names, I want them to be kind of flexible, like with Carl the Llama. If you've seen Llamas with Hats, like, you get that reference, and you're like, Carl, that kills people and whatnot. But even if you haven't seen that, like, llamas are still, like,
it's funny.
This fairly comical thing. Yeah. And some people have connected it to Jimmy Neutron. That was, like, completely inadvertent. Apparently there's, like, a kid that's all about llamas, and his name is Carl or something like that. I don't know. But I like my names to be kind of versatile, like that you can take them multiple different directions and have fun with them different ways. So that was why I settled on Carl the Llama eventually.
That's perfect. Sorry. I'm going to try and mute these coughs, but they're still hanging on for dear life. What would you say is your most fond memory in or because of gaming?
That's a tough one, just because I've been doing it for so long and a lot of fond memories. And I think my fondest ones are probably from Brood War. Like, those customs were just very near and dear to my heart.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think they'd be very relevant for people, so I'll settle with a more recent one. And this will seem really weird, and if you haven't read my posts, like, you'll think I'm a total jerk for saying this. But so when I was playing with my team, Beyond Reason, in the competitive scene, we'd been together for about 2 weeks, and things were going kind of rough for the first week and a half. We were losing a lot of games that we shouldn't have in scrims, and we were getting ready for our first tournament, and then, like, 2 days before the tournament, things just turned around, and we started doing really well against good teams, and we were communicating well, and everything was just coming together, and we were starting to feel, like, this energy and this momentum, and things were feeling great, and we ended up placing 3rd, 4th at this tournament Saturday. And so, like, we really rode that wave really well. But as we were preparing for the matches, the tournament was on Saturday, but then if you did well enough, it continued Sunday. And so, well, everybody was like, you know, we could do well. We might even be playing Sunday. Like, this hype had been building in the comms after practice. And finally, I take Sundays off. I work very long hours the other 6 days of the week, but Sundays is my time off.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, Carl, are you going to be able to make time on Sunday? And they'd gotten all worked up, and they were riding this wave of emotion. I was the team captain, and I did the manager stuff, and I'd kind of just been sitting back waiting for my chance. And I was like, I'm going to rain on this parade. I'm going to shut this hype down. Cause we were overhyped a little bit. And we overperformed a little bit at the tournament, and I was glad we overperformed, but we did do better than we were. And so I wanted to motivate the guys, but also not have them going in thinking that they were going to get everything on a silver platter. And so I was like, guys, let's not get overhyped. We're not going to be on there Sunday. Let's be real. And I killed it. It was, the mood just dropped like a dead balloon right there. And it felt so good, that moment. Like, I felt so good in killing that. I told you from the beginning it was going to be a terrible story, but it felt so good. And then when we got to Saturday, and we did beat Complexity, and we were gonna go on to Tempo Storm in the next round, like, I was so happy to eat those words. I didn't even care. Like, it was just good. And
see, okay, that's a silver. That's like the happy part.
Oh yeah,
happy end.
every single time I would eat my words in that situation, not like, and I kind of said them like hoping that I would eat the words, but. Yeah. Yeah,
some like, sort of reverse psychology. You guys, come on. You're not that good.
Well, I mean, every team needs a blend of confidence, but also caution, right? Mm-hmm. And so if the team is feeling really, really down and dejected, you need to give them the pep talks. And that was actually my role a lot of the time. I was usually the one, like, giving the positive stuff. But this time I got to rain on the parade, and it actually felt really, really good. And it was fun.
So are you in, you guys still participating in the tournament and all that?
Beyond Reason is not. That roster disbanded. That tournament was the second week of April, I think. because we joined together April 1st, and we've been together 2 weeks when it happened. And that roster disbanded the middle of May. And I've made some rosters since then and disbanded the... I wrote an article today that's on the Hero subreddit about kind of the experience that pro players have in the circuit and why there's so much turnover, those sorts of things, because it's not what people think very often. It's a long read, but if you want to understand what pro players' lives are like, I think it's a good one. But
yeah,
right now,
I'll definitely read it.
Right now I'm pretty much settled into content creation. I've mostly given up, on going after a pro career at this point. And that's a whole nother ball of wax. So I'm not gonna bother with explaining that right now. Although, if
yeah, that's fine. I mean, it sounds like a story I'd like to hear, but I totally get it if it's not for right now.
I mean, if it's of interest, maybe later on down the road or something.
Yeah, maybe we can do an episode about taking it to the next level.
right on. So what is your favorite role to play in Heroes?
That's a bit misleading. Or the answer will be a bit misleading coming from me, because I am a train. I get on my track and I never leave it. I just stay there and do the same thing over and over. And I did support in the first MOBA I've played, so I've just kind of stubbornly stayed there. But support is my favorite role. I feel like it's the most challenging and it's the most dynamic. And I like challenges.
Yeah, it is, man. It totally is. I already want to derail and start asking a bunch of other questions, but I'll be good. How would you compare Heroes then to some of the other MOBAs that you've played?
There's a couple big things. Heroes, I say in my mind, like when I'm thinking these thoughts, Heroes is boomier than other MOBAs. And I don't know quite how to translate that. It's just not so much that it's more action packed, but like the heroes do more and you feel like you have more control and it feels like things happen faster and like being very precise with your timings, is more impactful. Like when I played League of Legends, the champions are just felt so dull and so boring and like I could do nothing with them.
Mm-hmm.
And in Heroes, it doesn't feel that way. It feels boomier. I haven't played Dota, so I can't speak to that. I am a train. I play one game and I play it a lot and I deviate from it very little.
Yeah.
The other thing too is, Heroes is much more efficient in terms of having a good gameplay experience.
Mm-hmm.
The last hitting thing is big. It's kind of like Blizzard has streamlined the process. And, you have a lot less of this, it's like at a rodeo. There's different jobs, right? You've got the guy that gets to ride the bull, and you've got the guy that has to, you know, clean up the manure afterwards. You know, you've got the cool job, and you've got the mundane job. And I don't know much about rodeos. I don't know if that's actually how they split things up. That's just the example coming to my mind right now.
So
we'll assume it's true. And I feel like League of Legends is just a lot more of that menial work of just, you know, cleaning up the bull manure.
Yeah.
And so and Heroes is not. Like, you don't have to worry about last hitting. You have these much shorter games that are very driven and you're constantly fighting. You're constantly working against other people. And I like PvP way more than PvE. It's more dynamic, it's more challenging, it's more stimulating. And so that's what Heroes is to me. It's much more PvP based. It's much more action packed. It's much more dynamic, and you feel like you have more control.
Awesome. Yeah, that makes sense. I know we've talked before about like the last hit thing, and I don't know. There's something that Blizzard does with their games. There's a certain sauce that they put into things that just really, I don't know. They do it right, and I feel like they've taken this genre that was kind of born from their games to begin with, and then turn around and kind of tried to retake hold of that again. So,
yeah, and I think Blizzard, like, people enjoy games in different ways, and so like Blizzard is really good at giving everybody what they want. You know, they'll have good competitive aspects, but they'll also have good like fun things with like Brightwing's lines. She's a hilarious character, and you know, just every detail caters to somebody, and you know, it's a very efficient thing. You don't have any, you know, just bulk lying around stuff in the game. Everything is there, making the experience more fun.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. That's a good way to put it.
Yeah. Rob, do you have any bonus questions?
If I do, we're going to derail. For
All right. Well, we'll call those content questions then. All right.
Awesome.
This is Magdalena from Akers, and you're listening to The Training Dummies with Rob and Daryl.
All right. If you have any questions or comments or just want to find out what we're doing, we're active on Twitter at Training Dummies. Rob is at Rob Copeland, and myself, Daryl, is at Hend_TTD. So, as Rob mentioned, I haven't been playing very much lately, but I want to get back into it. Like, it is a fun game. I enjoy it. So, yes, how do we take our game to the next level, I guess?
And, so, we did an episode, I don't know, a couple months ago now. Maybe longer than that. I don't know. But it was really about, like, how to get into the game and some of the basics. And like you were mentioning, you know, how it's really streamlined for people who want to get into it rather than some of the sillier, you know, the last hit and the gearing and the, you know, all the behind the scenes stuff. How Heroes really just kind of allows you to, whatever level gameplay you are, just jump into it. Mm-hmm. So we've done it. We're past all that now, and we're ready to just take it to the next level, to get in, to, you know, to go from, you know, a lot of us play, us friends, people on the raid team, listeners, a lot of people, it's still kind of stick around AI matches, maybe some QM stuff. So what if you're, where do we start? I don't know, like I mentioned, you had written that Reddit post that was just a really good, you know, like how to get better tips, what to do.
So, I mean, it's going to be different for everybody, obviously, because everybody's at different levels. And everybody, I have, you know, different theories in my head, and I call one like the 47% theory, which is basically like, assume there's 100 things, 100 skills to master in the game. And if you're in silver, you have like 47 of them mastered. But you can have, you know, you can have the first 47, and another guy can have literally the last 47. Mm-hmm. And so, you have literally zero of the same skills, you know, matching up with each other. And so what's going to help one person is literally going to be of zero use. Like, the other person has it completely mastered. Mm-hmm. And so I think assessing where you are is a really good step. Understanding what you do well and making observations, watching streams, reading content, trying to figure out what you don't understand, what you're not thinking about. Because if you can, most mistakes that people make, it's because they're just not thinking about something. Like, if their teammates are dying elsewhere on the map when they're having, you know, free lane control, then it's like, well, you're just not thinking about looking at the minimap and seeing that there's this stuff going on the other side of the map. And so part of it's realizing the things that you're not thinking about. Part of it's just assessing where you're at and trying to get a good scope for what all is in the game, what all skills need to be mastered. And to do that, you have to play the game a lot. You have to spend time, or watch streams a lot. You know, you have to get into it and experience and just invest time, get used to living in this different world. And, you can take it from there.
That's actually really good because I know a lot of times when I'm playing, I do something and right when I do it, I'm like, yeah, I'm going to die. And I totally know, like in that moment, I'm like, yep, I'm being stupid. I'm sorry. I apologize in advance. And I just continue to do what I'm doing rather than, you know, I'm on Butcher and I focus somebody and I'm like running through their towers. I'm like, nope, I'm going to get that Nova. I'm going to get her. Let's keep going. You know, like, so nice. Yeah. And I know it's such a stupid thing and I always do it and I always do it and I always do it. And I'm like,
yeah,
why do I do that?
Well, and Heroes is a new game, right? So most people who played it have played something else. When I was in college, I don't think I've said this yet. I was a psych major, an education major, and an English major. I was going to be a high school English and psychology teacher. So I understand cognitive processes and learning fairly well. And one of the best ways to learn is literally just taking something you know and finding a way to compare it to this new thing and building off of what you knew before. So, like, most people have played other video games before, and if you can just draw parallels between, like, things that you've mastered, skills that you've mastered in other games, like, try to find how you can compare them, mm-hmm. you'll naturally get better, because you'll see things in terms that you're used to, and it'll make more sense, and you'll catch yourself before you go diving past there. You'll be like, you know, if this was this boss, you know, and he had these debuffs that the fort has, you know, it's going to slow me and my auto attacks, I wouldn't be diving past here because I'm Butcher. Mm-hmm. I auto attack things, you know, and so you'll catch things sooner if you can frame things in terms that you're more used to beforehand.
I'm like, that makes sense. You know, you step past this line and, like, everything that you have to contribute goes away.
Yeah, and I mean, it's great on the new maps too, where with the Battlefield of Eternity. Sometimes I struggle with names. You know, I have their names for them in my head.
Yeah.
But I forget the actual names, even if it's something that I've done 700 times. But on the Battlefield of Eternity with the bosses, like it shows the red circles under you. And, you know, you can tell very easily that that's probably not something I want to stand in. You don't know right away that it's, you know, a stun that deals massive damage and stuns for a long time. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's pretty a pretty good guess that that's not a buff. You don't want to be standing in.
And
if you're used to thinking about things that way, and the infernal shrines, the guardians, like, they'll show circles where they're going to go. Mm-hmm. A very powerful objective. The Punishers, that's what they're called. And so just, you know, relating experience that you've had before, even if it's RTS or something like that, like, which is what I came from, there are parallels that you can draw.
Man, I just feel like I do so many obvious, silly things that, like, when I'm done, I just should apologize for them, but I keep doing it. So, I don't know if you want to maybe go through some of the posts that you had you had written out some detailed stuff on how to specifically address maybe some maps or some character types or.
Yeah. So, one second. Let me find where I have it written. Because I write these things down so I don't have to remember them, you know?
I know. That's what show notes are for.
And then Okay, here we go. So, I've written about a lot of things, and I intend to write about a lot more. But one that I did recently that didn't pick up much ground is Mercenary Tips and Tricks. Mm-hmm. And I'm choosing this right now because it's kind of applicable for every map.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if people are interested, you can find my stuff pretty easily if you do Carl the Llama searches or whatever. But if you're interested in the other stuff, which is generally longer, I think, but with this mercenary stuff, so, like, let's look at the Fats camp. The Fats camp, and I say Fats because the ranged camp, the easy camp, is different on all of the maps that are not Battlefield of Eternity and not Infernal Shrines. All the rest of the maps, the other seven, it's the Fats camp, and it works very differently from the ranged camp on those new maps. The old mercenary camps work very differently from the new mercenary camps. With the old mercenary camps, the Fats, when you're taking the Fats, they do single target focus damage. You can't dodge it, but it only hurts one person. When you cap them,
those are the ones with the two big guys.
Right? Mm-hmm. Yep, the two big golems.
Okay.
And they're a little bit chubby, so that's why we call them Fat.
Okay, all right. That's okay. What I thought you meant, but I wanted to make sure.
Yep. No, it's good to stop me if I'm not clear. But once you take them, they do AoE damage, so you get a lot more return on investment because they clear waves much faster. And they'll do work, and they siege super well because of their range. They're able to just keep pushing a lane forever and ever and ever. Particularly at low elos, if you time the Fats correctly, they will get mega value for you. If a fight drags on, they can potentially take the whole gate set, you know, both towers and the gate, or they can take a fort in some cases. They are a extremely powerful, even overpowered mercenary camp. The knights, on the other hand, you don't get that same sort of return. You basically get what you put in. They do single target, and unless a fort has lost a lot of ammo, they're not going to get any sustained push value. And so, in general, it's a lot easier to go for the easy camps and, you know, just kind of let them go and force things elsewhere on the map. But with the new maps, it's flipped. I almost called them Riot for a second. Blizzard changed things up so that the hard camp gives you more return on investment. The easy camp does what it's supposed to. It's still ranged and it can still siege. Mm-hmm. But the hard camp will keep spawning guys over and over again. And when you clear it, it doesn't respawn the little guys. You know, as neutral minions that will attack you. But once you cap it and it becomes yours, it'll keep respawning them in lane. And so you do get, a greater return on investment with those. So, I definitely think that's a good move by Blizzard, to switch up the camps. They balance them much better. And so those are just like some easy ways that you can get more out of your merc camps, just knowing which ones are stronger on which maps. And just in general, even if you have, you know, the easy camp on the new maps or the hard camp on the old maps, if you just time when the map objective is, if you just know roughly when it's coming up and have the merc camps, you cap them right beforehand, leave them pushing when you go take the map objective, that's the best way to use merc camps, especially if the other team is not capping their mercs. Because they'll get value for you while you're dealing with that stuff. They'll crush the PvE waves stronger. They'll get experience for you. They'll get land for you, and they'll just be good.
I know there's one tip in particular with the Haunted Mines. If you take the fat guys, now there's a timing trick to it. So when you go down to the mines and you get the skulls for the golem, you want to wait until the enemy golem passes their last wall to come into that area that's initially the neutral area to come towards you, and as soon as their golem passes that, then you want to cap the fat guys there, right?
Correct.
And that way
they don't like get too close and get worked down by the enemy golem. Mm-hmm. They'll just be very comfortably giving you a lot of DPS on it.
So they basically, you cap them, and they start to come down into the lane, and the enemy golem's right there, and they just sit there and just ranged lay into the enemy golem. So it's like free damage on their golem.
Yeah, and it's a lot of value, too. They do a lot of damage over time, and they do a lot of damage in general. Like I said before, they're a very strong camp.
That's a huge tip on the Haunted Mines. Are there any other situations where you want to take certain camps at certain times, you know, to help with objectives or anything like that?
Not on mines. It's a very simple map. I think the biggest tip for mercs on that is actually, you know, the fast one is the biggest, but the second biggest is don't go to the night camp. Like, just avoid it completely and don't push the lane that the enemy golem is in. Just focus completely on your golem lane because it'll push faster. The map objective there is really, really, really strong. It's gotten nerfed over time, mm-hmm. but it's still a very strong map objective. And so pushing with your golem, or even if the golems aren't active, if you've got some dead space between, the mines spawning, just pushing in your lane, and slowing down their enemy push, is the key to that map. It's sort of like a big long base race.
How about some of the other maps? On the topic of mercs, are there any tips maybe for the other maps?
What comes to mind is Sky Temple. You've got the first two temples that spawn at a designated time, and then depending on how long it takes for them to get capped, mm-hmm. Afterwards, the second temple, or the third temple, technically, but it's in the second rotation, is very, very important. And so having mercs pushing during it, it's important because it gets you level 10 and it's around critical talent levels, but it's also like the first major point of contestation. It's sort of like the place that, either team has a chance to get their first lead of the game to really mm-hmm. break away with it. Okay. And so if you can have mercs pushing during it, it's a great way to put pressure on the enemy, put mental pressure on them, be like, oh, they have mercs pushing us. We have to force things and make them do slip ups. And if they don't, then you get some slow push. It's not as big as if, you know, they let the pressure get to them and screw up, but it's still important. And the easiest way to remember that is, call them 420 knights, because usually that's when the timer is. That's when you want to cap them, is at 4 minutes and 20 seconds.
So long as you're kind of like doing everything on tempo, then right around that.
Yeah. Point. I mean, if the first, set of temples takes a while to get capped to, and it's timed off of when the last shot ends. If it takes a long time for that to happen, then it'll be delayed. But most games, I feel like, one team gets one temple, the other team gets the other temple. There's maybe a little bit of fighting, but they go down pretty quick.
Yeah. So, something I'm kind of thinking about then is, because I do play a lot of AI matches, it changes your perception completely. Because I think even on a harder difficulty, the AI is just a whole different thing. Like you can kind of take merc camps when you want. You know, and it's like, you're not in any real danger. So I don't know. I feel like, so if you do play a lot of AI, which is fine, just a whole different level of game.
Yeah, totally.
That you maybe start to lose some of that awareness of some of that, just how to stay on top of things. Cause then I'll go into, I did a quick match with some friends the other day, and it was very, you know, you had one person, like your shot caller, kind of go here, ping in here, do this, you know, focus on this guy, let's do that, you know, and it's very, you know, it's very high tempo and very, you know, you kind of need to be on your toes, and you can't just go and be like, well, I'm Sylvanas, I'm just going to go take this camp, no big deal, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Daryl, you're being quiet.
Yeah, I'm listening, though. I'm taking stuff in. I'm learning. I'm learning.
So the mercs is a bit of a metagame, then. You can't, you know, if you're really trying to make the most of it. I mean, I don't know how many times, like, I went and grabbed a merc camp, and then they just got wrecked immediately, and it was almost pointless.
Like they found you capping the camp, or
you take it, you cap it, whatever, you know, and you start to see them run out, and then the enemy team will come up, and you know, if three or four of them are together, it's like there was no merc camp; they just blow through, you know.
Yeah, I mean, and this is in the merc quest too. There's different ways of using mercs. If they come to clear the mercs, you just move on to another camp a lot of the time, and if they come to clear those mercs, then you can set up an ambush, or you can move to another camp, you know, and it kind of buys you, a 10 second lead on where they were. You risk, you know, them coming on you during those 10 seconds of finding you and crushing you at that camp. But afterwards, if you are successfully able to take the camp, you kind of get ahead of them in the rotation and you're able to dictate where the next step is.
It totally is a metagame, then. Once you started, you know, in each map, you know, having different mercs and different objectives, and like you said, the newer maps having the kind of the maybe even better designed merc camps, and you know, the shaman with the two dogs. I like that. That's like one of my favorite ones.
And I feel like as the game evolves, and I wrote about this today, games evolve, and the skill goes up. You know, the understanding of what you can do just gets better and better as time goes along. I think the next big step, or maybe, you know, one or two down the road, is people understanding how to anticipate merc camps and punish them. And you get this whole metagame, not so much around map objectives, which is where it's at now, but also I think those will get a little more stalemated. People go a little bit more even. Depending on the map, but merc camps will be where you see the real plays made. It's like, okay, this team is anticipating that they're going to go for this merc camp, and they've set up this ambush in anticipation, and the whole mind games for that. Kind of like how you'll see different metas in League of Legends, for example, where, you know, okay, during this meta, mids are always roaming during this timer. You got to look out for mids and stuff like that. I feel like mercs are going to be like the big thing. That is going to grab a lot of attention, where the plays are going to be made.
Do you feel like maybe that was some of the thought behind the way Rexxar was designed?
Because
he seems to be, you know, depending on how you build him, he seems to be, like, really, really merc-focused.
Yeah. I am very critical of Rexxar, partly because he's not my playstyle, and, like, I'll never enjoy that champion. Which is like where all of my hatred for him stems from. But I also think he's like a really weak champion, and not everybody does. So, you know, don't take that as the gospel truth, but that is something that, I feel, and I can't really defend him. I don't know how to. I think he's garbage. I think he's very, very readable. And I was casting some games on Tuesday where a team picked him twice in a row. And, the first game, it worked out. The second game, they lost the game 100% because they had a Rexxar on their team, and nearly threw the series. The third game of the set, and it was the finals for this tournament. The third game of the set, their core survived with 13% health on a core dive. If Zeratul hadn't gotten a clutch of Void Prison, the core would have gone down. Like it's literally as close as a game could get. And I was like, they almost threw this set where they completely controlled the first game because they had a Rexxar. And my co-caster didn't agree, and that was fine. And lots of pro players don't agree, and that's fine. Like, multiple opinions are good. But that's kind of how I see him. He's very readable. He's very one-dimensional in that, he has to PvP, or he has to PvE, and he's very weak at PvP. And therefore he's very, very readable. If you haven't seen Rexxar on the map for a while, he's probably a boss and you can go kill him. You know, stuff like that. And so, as you get to higher and higher skill matches, it's too predictable. You need to have more options than that to be able to beat opponents that are able to anticipate what you're gonna do.
That's pretty well put. I like playing him. I don't think he's good. I think he's kind of fun. He is what he is. Here's a completely random question then. What's your thought on their schedule putting out Heroes right now? They've kind of committed to a 3-week cycle, I guess it is. Would you rather see more Heroes cranked out that are possibly, I mean, we know Rexxar was super buggy. Lots of problems with Rexxar. Would you rather see them maintain that 3-week schedule and see, like, possibly not the best heroes or buggy heroes? Or would you rather see them take 5 or 6 weeks and put out, like, a really solid hero?
Yeah, this isn't something that I've put a ton of thought into.
It's a completely random.
Just because things that aren't very practical and very, like, pragmatic for me right away, I don't care much about, because it's like, I used to comment on balance, and after a while I just felt like nobody was listening. It didn't matter, so I got tired, and I rarely even pay attention. But I tend to favor a style where you maintain everything that you have, and you make sure that every piece that is in the game is super well maintained, is very efficient, is very dynamic, is just a very good piece. And that was one of the reasons why I didn't like League of Legends, because, you know, you have 120 champions and you see the same 20 over and over again, you know, like 80% of the game was just lying there. It was just dead and useless and cluttering up space. And so I think I favor a little bit, maintaining champions and going at a slower pace, making sure that things are a little more quality and the champions that are in the game are more finely balanced and that they're more diverse and blah, blah, blah. But at the same time, it's a new game, and so people are used to bigger champion pools and more options available to them. And so I kind of have no strong feelings one way or the other, but I'd lean slightly towards going at a slower pace and just making sure that you're happy with everything as it comes out. Because we know Blizzard likes to do that and is known for doing quality. We discussed that earlier.
I know that you see the power creep issues and, like, basically, you know, coming up with abilities and talents and ways to design these heroes that are going to differentiate them. And people look at, like, Leoric now, and they're like, well, you know, his trait compared to Diablo's trait. Well, Leoric is way better, you know, and stuff like that. And I don't know. I don't know how much time they're really going to put into going back and reworking some of the original heroes and whatnot. I don't know. I like the pace that they're coming out with heroes, and I don't feel like, I feel like maybe Rexxar's been the first one so far that was that didn't just,
yeah, it felt like a dud.
Kind of, you know. I like I said, I like playing him. I'm not gonna, mm-hmm. I don't hate him. But he is what he is, you know. And like you said, I don't know. We'll have to see. He's super new. I don't. We'll have to see if he shows up in some pro matches. I don't think he will, really, though. You know, I think for what he brings to the table, he's maybe not the right choice for high end play.
Yeah, I mean, he's a low skill cap champion, and metas will go in and out of favoring that style. And the reason he's low skill cap largely is because you can't do much with the AI, and so you're very reliant on that, and there's not much control that you can exert over it. And, you know, since there's less you can do with that, there's less skill that you can put in. And I lost my train of thought a little bit. Where is that going with that?
Just talking about, you know, pro play and what you're going to see in the meta. What would you say is probably the highest skill cap?
Like the highest skill cap champion?
Yeah. I'm just going to keep firing questions.
Maybe I'm going to look at my own class, because I try to avoid speaking for tanks and DPSs and flex whenever possible. And so for support, I'd say Monk is right now. I've been experimenting with him lately.
Love Terry.
And he's very hard to make work, but with time and with practice, and we're talking, you know, hundreds of games, literally, I think you can eke a lot out of that champion. You can make him very highly effective. You can find comps that he fits in, that it becomes very worthwhile to organize a draft around that pick. It takes a lot of experimentation. It takes thinking in ways that you're not used to. It takes failure and frustration. But ultimately, I think you can get more out of him than anybody else. If you have the desire to, and that's probably not as applicable for solo queue. Like, that's something that you need a team to work with to design comps and stuff for. If for solo queue, Brightwing is highest skill cap support right now, and that's what I've been playing a lot of lately. Just the timings with your polymorphs and your shields. A quarter of a second makes the difference between a great support and a terrible support. Like, it really does. And so just knowing how to anticipate abilities and be able to hit those timings is really, really clutch. But the reward is worth it.
I know with the Monk, there's just the depending on what talents you take, it changes things a lot. You know, you take the one that makes your heal go off twice, but there's, you know, a little 2-second gap in between. Well, people are running away all the time. Like, hey, wait. Chasing them down. You know, and it's like, I mean, you have a lot to offer, but people have to, people almost have to understand your class well enough to play it in order to benefit from it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, that's supporting in general, is like, you have to understand everybody, but nobody understands you. Like, support is the least played in other games. I think it's a little bit more played in this game. I think Blizzard's done a good job, and people understand that, and they're more willing to play it in this game. But it's still self-sacrificial, and it still requires being able to understand how 9 people in a fight are thinking, and being able to work off of that optimally. And you also, like, a lot of people will fall into one of two ruts. They'll either not think about their team enough, or they'll not think about themselves enough. And so, you know, Malfurions will get caught out of position because they'll run up for a heal or a root, because they're looking at a teammate and be like, oh, they can follow up on this. I'll go cast this root. And they get too close, and they get punished for it because they weren't thinking about themselves. You know, it's, you have to toggle back and forth, multiple times a second. Kind of like, I once saw a StarCraft gamer. He was flipping back and forth between two bases, you know, seeing two different screens so much that the images were blurring on his screen. Not that the screen was malfunctioning, but that, you know, that to the eye, the mm-hmm. image is blurred, and it was like you right. were seeing two images huh. of these two bases, and he was like issuing multiple commands. It's kind of like that with support. You have to be toggling back and forth and like seeing two images at the mm-hmm. same time, and just it sounds crazy, but if you get used to it, it's really, really fun.
I know that Blizzard's done really good, and I'm not entirely sure about other MOBAs, but you have the barrier to entry is very low. I think we kind of mentioned that. You have support heroes like Lee Lee, and mm-hmm. you have a lot of, they put Rainer in as your tutorial hero, which I think the more you play him, you realize the more complex he is. But yes. I think they've done a lot of these things that are like, hey, look, it's really not that hard, and it's really kind of like, you know, go in with Lee Lee, and it's all the you don't have to worry about targeting hills. You don't have to worry about, you know, a lot of stuff. And it kind of gives you a good intro to it. Do you think there's anything that you can do, not only from the support perspective, because I know that you play primarily support, but do you think there's anything that you can do to understand what it takes then once you get initial that, like, oh, this is how the game works, to become better? I don't know if that's a good way to put it.
Yes, I'll answer that by telling a little bit of a personal story of my own. When I first started to play in the game, you know, still getting used to it, play a little bit of this champ, play a little bit of that champ, don't own any, you know, mm-hmm. save up a little gold, buy the cheap ones, etc. Mm-hmm. But the first champ that I really settled on that I liked was Brightwing. And once I started playing Brightwing, I played nothing but Brightwing. I'd play like 20 games of Brightwing to every one game of anything else, right? It was just Brightwing, Brightwing, Brightwing all the time. Because that's me. I'm a train. I get in my track and I just go at it forever. And, I didn't really care about diversifying my pool. I was having fun with Brightwing. Mm-hmm. The first, advertisement for a tournament that I saw, I was like, oh, hey, this would be fun to do. I started playing the game in early November, so like, it was December, middle of December, so it was like 6 weeks after I'd started playing the game. And I was like, oh, this will be fun. And it started getting me into the competitive a little bit. And because you can't play just one champion in competitive, I had to learn Uther. And I was like, mm-hmm. well, I don't really want to. Uther's dumb and clunky, and Brightwing's the coolest, and nothing else matters. But I guess if that's what I have to do to play competitive, okay, I guess I'll learn another champion. And mm-hmm. so I learned Uther. Little balance changes came along, and I had to learn more than Brightwing and Uther because the meta shifted and blah, blah, blah. I had to learn Rhaegar and Malfurion as well. And so, you know, I sort of was forced to get out of my comfort zone, just being that one-track train that I like to be. And now I've forced myself to get, you know, two or three champions to level 10 each month. It used to be two. When Blizzard changed their pace, I changed it to three because I want to get every champion in the game to 10 because I want to have that diversity of knowledge and just mm-hmm. understand everything. Now, those goals probably aren't practical for most people because it requires a lot of hours mm-hmm. that just aren't maintainable. But, like, I feel like some people like to play around. Like, some people are the opposite of me. They like to, you know, play one game as a champion, maybe gosh. Three games as a champion, then they'll yeah. play something else, you know, because they get bored with it. And they flit around. I feel like whatever your comfort zone is, you can do that for a while as you're getting used to the game, and like that's how you learn. Okay, but at a certain point, you have to force yourself to do the opposite. You know, whatever ditch you fall into, you have to go into the other ditch for a while, and do something that you're not comfortable with if you want to improve. If that's, you know, if a high ranking and maybe a pro gaming career is something that you're interested in, those are things you have to train yourself to do.
Mm-hmm. That's actually really good advice. I think I fall into the second camp a little more. I think I've got almost everybody at level 6 or 7 or 8, and, you know, but I don't have anybody at 10. And, I mean, I've been playing since before launch, and I don't have any heroes at 10. I'm just
it takes a while.
All over the place. Well, that you get to 9, and that's not so bad. But once you hit 9, all of a sudden it goes.
Oh yeah,
it feels like the game's don't move the experience bar anymore.
Seriously. And then AI matches don't really give you that much experience.
Yeah. The struggle.
I'm glad you guys can't hear me coughing. It's terrible.
I'm sure it is.
That's great advice. I think I should... I have a couple of heroes that I would say that I'm pretty solid with, that I really like, that I know inside and out. I know which, you know, I totally understand their talent trees, and I know what I would pick in which situations. But I feel like, yeah, I bounce around so much that I'm like, oh, I don't know. Gotta go to Heroes Fire real quick. I don't even know. I don't have any clue. You know, I'm picking talents. They're like, it's probably a bad talent, or, you know. But, you know, I could probably stand to focus a little more. I think Daryl tends to play Diablo.
Yeah.
The game with the hero. I think he needs to pretty much play Diablo.
Yeah, I'll do one or two different ones just for my quests, and then it's back to Diablo. But I'm still not level 10 because I haven't played in probably 2 months now, and I'm trying to come up with questions here. It's like, but, oh, man. I should have played a couple games this week.
You should have,
so I could come up with some questions here.
What's the biggest thing that you've done that really, I mean, obviously putting the time in, learning, you know, so what I do a lot of times is I will watch, like you said, watch YouTube videos, watch streaming matches, read up on it, you know, I'm browsing the Heroes subreddit, I'm, you know, looking at, you know, people have a lot of tips and they're totally willing to share them, you know? People write these, like you wrote up, like, these amazing posts with some really good stuff in there. What would you say is maybe the biggest, the one biggest thing somebody could do, like, let's take Daryl. What's the biggest thing Daryl could do if he really wants to just be a rock star at Diablo?
I think for understanding the champion, like, understanding a specific champion to be a rock star at, you know, Diablo or Brightwing or something like that, everybody learns differently. I am an experiential learner. I need to do it. I don't watch. I don't read. I just go in there and do, and I mess up and I figure it out, and I just keep doing, right? I just keep playing with that thing. So for me, it's that. If that's not your style, if you're able to learn much faster by watching other people do it, then streams are probably the best thing for you. Mm-hmm. And like we talked about earlier, like identifying what you're good at and identifying what you're not good at and treating them appropriately. But as far as in general, the thing that will relieve the most stress and, just help you do better in general is to just go with the flow. Like, don't try to tell people what to do. Don't try to assume that you know what's right to do. Just watch what everybody's doing. Mm-hmm. And even if it's not the right thing, just go with it. And, you know, sometimes you'll be able to change that. Sometimes you'll be able to say, hey guys, I think we should go over here, you know, with a ping, you know, with one ping is risky. Some people are really sensitive about pings, mm-hmm. but you know, more than that. And you're really, asking to set off a powder keg. But, if you just go with the flow for the most part, things will work out. I like to say that a single bad plan is better than three good ones.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it's just see what your team is doing and just go with it. There, in solo queue, generally speaking, there's too many chiefs and not enough Indians.
Seems like there's always somebody who wants to ping and call shots and go here and let's do this.
Mm-hmm.
And I think exactly like you're saying, it doesn't do your team any good for you to go, man, that guy's a jerk, I'm not doing it.
Yep.
And then you're off by yourself, getting killed, trying to take camps, you know, whatever you're doing.
In the immortal words of Carl the Llama, now we're both in the wrong. When you do that, like neither group succeeds, neither you nor the four.
Yeah, because, I mean, in best case scenario, you have just put your team at a disadvantage, like by mm-hmm. deciding to ignore this person because you just don't like them pinging or
you don't give their plan a fair shot. You know, if you preemptively decide that you're not going to go with it, they ping that planning on, you know, five people. And whether they're right or wrong, that's what the plan was. And whoever commits to that is going to be the ones paying the price. And you'll pay the price at the score screen, you know, at the win or loss when the nexuses go down. or when the cores go down.
Yeah, so if you end up in a in a team fight and it's and everybody shows up, at least you know that you're 5-on-5 at that point.
Mm-hmm.
At least, you know.
And honestly, if you're 5 in solo queue, a lot of times they're not, and you'll just win because of that.
Mm-hmm.
That's why it pays to just go with the flow, even if it's the wrong thing.
I've heard this exact advice given before, and I've done it plenty of times, and I've also done the, nope, that guy is just a butthole, I don't even care, I don't even want to go over there, and it doesn't ever work out, you know, it doesn't ever, because then, you know, you're like, well, you need to, you know, then you're muting somebody, or, you know, you need to chill out, you need to shut up, or, you know, and I think that's what creates the toxic environment.
Yeah. And toxic environments are pretty common, but, oh, I lost that train of thought too. I am just slipping tonight, boys. I
thought you were a train.
Oh, no.
Come on.
I remember it. I remember it. So, I, in League with support, I caught flack all the time. Like, it was really popular in that game to just blame support for everything. And from that, I learned to, I've always been able to take criticism fairly well, mm-hmm. but I learned to be able to translate that criticism into meaningful feedback and data that's very, very useful, because your harshest critics are going to point things out for you mm-hmm. that maybe you're too kind on yourself and maybe you don't spot.
Yeah,
and
your friends aren't going to tell you that you're screwing this up. Or...
Yeah. If you take that, patiently and don't get emotional about it and don't take it too seriously either, but just kind of treat it as observations and mull it over in your head, you can really get some good feedback from the people that are flaming you. Now, a lot of times they just go off on this irrational name calling and all of that, but
yeah.
You know, wow, usually,
my mom really is a dirty girl.
Usually that stems from something in your play, you know, that's
yeah.
out. Yeah. And like we were saying earlier, even if it's the right thing, if it's not what your team is used to, it's worth compromising on. So if you're noticing that people are getting mad at you about something over and over again, even if it's something that you feel you're in the right on, keep it in the back of your head and do it sometimes, but try to cooperate with your team, try to give them what they're looking for.
Yeah, that's great. Good. Daryl?
Yes?
Do you have any questions?
I'm trying to think of some questions, but I'm coming up blank here. Yeah, I've got nothing.
All right, so what I want to do is get Daryl off of Diablo and get him to try a couple of different supports. Do you think Lili is a good intro support? This could lead to a whole other topic, but I think that the role, the way certain heroes are categorized is a little... wonky at times.
Oh yeah,
Tassadar and Tyrande, and you know, like their support, but are they really? You know, like
yeah. Even when I was new to the game, I kind of threw away Blizzard classifications of champions, like the names of that, and kind of you know had my own order in my head of this champion's this class and that champion's that class.
Bruiser or utility or whatever.
Yeah, I don't see that much of a difference between a specialist and an assassin in a lot of cases. And I feel like the assassin designation is not something that I like the assassin word is something that I so closely associate with things like Zeratul and Nova, you know, these sneaky, squishy, high burst champions and often high mobility. It shouldn't be something that's applied to Rainer or Vala, you know.
Yeah, that's funny.
It's completely different types of champions. They work in different ways. And so to classify melee assassins and ranged assassins, like they have some similarities, is really misleading, I feel like.
Would it do the game any good to have more categories?
Depends on what you mean by the game. Like, it's not going to affect gameplay that much, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
People who are newer to the game, which Heroes is sort of aimed for a little bit, it probably will help those people a lot. And getting new people into the scene, keeping them in the game because it'll be less confusing, and just stuff like that. And bringing new people to a game is always important because there's always people leaving a game, you know, no matter how good it is. For one reason or another, people are going to leave the game, so you constantly need new people coming in. That was the problem with Brood War Customs. Great, terrific maps, but the game was seen as outdated, and there was really no way to, like, draw new blood in. And so, you know, the population of Brood War custom maps just kind of slowly dwindled. And then when StarCraft II came out, it largely died. Sucked away all the followers.
Yeah, right. I think, to be honest, I still look at things from a very MMO perspective. I still, like, and my initial diagnosis of a hero is, are they a tank, a healer, or a DPS, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I think it can be broken down that way, but I don't know. I feel like the specialist, assassin, support, you know, it's like, it's still kind of in that vein, but there's so many that just, they're just not a real true support. And when you go into a quick match and you've got, you know, you've got a Tassadar and they've got a Malfurion or a Lili or whatever, you know, it's just not the same, you know, it's
not at all.
The toolkit's different, and they're definitely bringing things to the table, but, you know, it's not, you don't have a full-on healer that's really providing you a support, you know?
Well, I mean, Tassadar's kit is just not oriented towards healing and sustain and that stuff. Like, he's got the shield, but he has no other, like, non-selfish durability, you know, no other way to keep people alive. Not necessarily healing, it can be shielding, it can be damage prevention, such as Brightwing's Pixie Dust. It can be CC sometimes. Tassadar doesn't have any of that. He's a DPS that has some utility, sort of like a Lux or a Nidalee. He's not a support, and he's not strictly a DPS either. I almost used the wrong word there. But he's not strictly a DPS.
Yeah, and it sucks.
The same way that Raynor is. Like, he's a subclass of it.
Yeah, he's not. You're not even getting the best of both worlds. You're getting, like, you know, instead of getting 100%, you're getting like 40% and 40%, or, you know, maybe not even that. But, you know, it's like, I love playing Tassadar. I think he's great, but I don't know.
Yeah.
Still, maybe it has to do with the hero pool being so small, and maybe, you know, as that grows, it'll change. But, you know, I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of it. You're talking about breaking things up into support, tank, DPS. Mm. I mean, those are the three, like, main categories. Mm. But, you know, you can have rock, paper, scissors, or you can have rock, paper, scissors, lizard, Spock. You can break those categories up into support, tank, DPS, fighter, assassin. Fighters are basically just, like, slightly more damage-oriented tanks. Mm. And assassins are just hyper DPS favored DPSs. They sort of use their mobility differently is the big thing. And generally speaking, they'll have their burst concentrated much more than a DPS. But you can split those classes up into multiple subclasses. You've got Tassadar, who's a utility DPS. You know, you can, the more champions you have, the more you can differentiate them, the more you can make, you know, you can have these organized subclasses and say, okay, these champions function in this way. They work in these types of comps, etc.
Yeah. And then maybe if they were able to, you know, to splinter that even more, maybe they could come up with a more diverse daily quest system or something. I don't know. I feel like it's still a very young game. It hasn't gone for it.
Yeah.
I think sometimes Blizzard is a little slow to pull the trigger on things that we all feel are obvious, you know. Yeah. I know I was headed towards one question. If we're gonna make Daryl play a support class, what would you recommend starting out with? I don't know if he's gonna do it or not, but I'm gonna
so, try. Yeah. Daryl, why do you like Diablo? What do you like about him?
Why I don't is he know. Your favorite champion? He's fun to play.
I mean, you picked up Diablo. He wasn't a cheap or free character, so you latched onto him for some reason.
No, I just tried
just
him and
easy to get into.
Really enjoyed it. I don't know. And then I tried, I don't remember what support, but it was horrible. I had no fun. I'm like, this is stupid. I don't want to play support. I had the first experience I had as support was terrible. And it just, it didn't flow. It didn't feel good. It didn't feel fun. And now in my mind, all support is the same. They're all terrible. That's the way I'm thinking. That's the way.
Support's the reason you don't die, man.
So you like Diablo just because you can kind of like run in there and be tanky and like, and you just like tanks and be able to cause
but see, in Warcraft, I can't tank. I've tried tank. I'm a terrible tank in Warcraft. But in Heroes, I just want to run in there. Even when I've got a ranged character, I'm always running in. Even by accident, I'm running in. And I don't mean to be. It's like, crap, now I'm dead.
Melee Jaina.
Well, the bad news is that's not what the support meta is favoring right now. Like, it's really kind of lopsided towards being defensive and stuff like that. And so you might have a hard time finding a support that you're able to like. But that said, you can do some fun stuff with Monk. If you go the, it's called like Volley of 100 Fists or something like that, talent at 7, and you get 7-sided strike, you can run in there, you can get some damage in, you can heal, and then get out. You're probably not going to be healing allies a ton if you do that, but you might have some fun with it. Another option that's somewhat viable at low elos, I don't mean like low elos, but like below 3,500.
Okay, what does that even mean, low elos?
Okay, so elo, elo is a term left over from League, which borrowed it from chess. It's sort of like a way of ranking people with mathematical, matchmaking system, and people are divided into different groups. 3,500 in this game is like roughly the top 1%, I think. So anything below that, you can probably do some stuff, some fun stuff with Divine Storm on Uther. Above that, people are able to work around the stun pretty well, kite it out and not get hit by it, but below 3,500, so for 99% of the population, you can have some real fun with Uther. You run in there, you get your stun off, your E stun, you get your ultimate off, you get a good multi-man stun, you get some heals off, and if you die, you're able to keep healing your team for 10 seconds after you're dead, and so you can have a lot of fun with that.
Uther's awesome.
Yeah, now that I think about it, you might really like Uther, because you get a burning talent at level 7, so if you don't die, you're just like continually burning people up. It's sort of like the Burning Rage talent at 13, only you're able to get it at 7.
You can wear the Judgment set now. Hey, that's the one you have on your Paladin, right?
I have the purple one on my purple recolor on my Paladin.
You can do the purple.
You're able to feel like you're able to do stuff. And that's what old Uther used to do, was you'd run in there and you'd stun everybody, and it was great.
All right.
Awesome. Yep. I think you'd like Uther. I always recommend Lele to people because I just know that it's like, she's not invincible, but
Lele's like the Rexar of supports to me. Like, it just feels like a giant set of training wheels. I hate it.
Yeah, dude, she can just get away, like, get in there, she's just goofy.
No, man, I want to ride my bicycle. I don't want no training wheels. I want,
All right.
I want high dives and backflips, and I don't care if I break my back. I want to do the cool stuff.
There it is. You need to try Uther.
Extreme llamas.
Extreme. Awesome. I'm guessing Gerald didn't have any more questions because he didn't earlier, but did you have any maybe other tips or anything to wrap it up with for just stepping up the game? Or
Be a good teammate. I mean, half of the game is social interaction and people and being able to work with that. Do that, you'll have more fun, you'll have less stress, you'll avoid, the problems that a lot of people have with MOBAs. It's great when I read a Reddit comment and somebody's like, I never have toxic teams. I'm like, that's great. You're probably a good teammate. You're probably, a very nice person in real life too. Mm-hmm. Just put some effort into doing that online and you'll be very happy you did.
I feel like a lot of things are actually really easy to diffuse with just a little bit of positivity.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, totally. You can immediately, turn a mistake into something funny, like I said, sometimes I've made some dumb decisions for sure. And if you like own up to it right away or apologize or yep, I'm really sorry I did that, you like usually
yeah people, yeah if you call yourself out, then other people don't feel the need to. A lot of people that comment on my Reddit stuff, they'll be like, these people don't realize they're doing bad. And I'm like, well, most people actually do. So, but if you call it out on yourself, it lets your team know that, you're watching what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Yep, totally. Well, right on. I don't know. I mean, we had a couple other map tips here, but I don't think those are a big deal. Right now, at least. Well, if you have anything to add to this topic or have any questions about future topics, please send us an email to the show at thetrainingdummies.com, or you can leave us a voicemail over at thetrainingdummies.com. I feel like I said that twice.
You probably did.
Probably.
Don't try to tank in healing gear.
Unclaimed mail will be deleted after 30 days.
Always check your loot spec before a boss fight.
Things I learned the hard way.
If we're going to use this on a hero show, I think we should get some heroes. Things I learned the hard way, perhaps.
Probably. There's probably plenty of them.
Alright. Well, I wasn't going to hit this button, but then I saw that Carl had something here, so... So what did you learn the hard way?
Oh, I learned everything the hard way. I think I've touched on this before, but that's very much my place. I'll play a lot of games, and I'll play a lot of games that are just there to experiment and to crash and burn, and I'll play over-aggressive, particularly in quick match. And a lot of times I'll like have a very clear way to get out of a situation. I'll just die anyways, just because I want to experiment. So I learned everything the hard way. So, but one thing in particular recently was, a disconnect as I was joining games. I would tab during the load screen, and for some reason, when I would come back in, it would always crash me at the beginning of the game. This happened a couple of times when I was playing Monk, and so I would get the wrong passive, and I'm very, very, upset when I get the wrong passive on Monk, when the couple times when this happened, because it throws off your entire playstyle. If you don't have the healing passive, you can't function at all the same way. And it got me the damage passive. And I was pretty upset about it, but, I didn't you know, say anything to anybody or anything like that. I was just like, well, I'll make the most of it. And I experimented with new builds, and I actually, because of that, was able to find some new ways to hybridize him and get more use out of him, using seven-sided strike instead of divine palm, which, I'd been hesitant to use, but both of his ultimates are pretty hard to work with. Mm-hmm. But, you know, because I had, you know, that misfortune happened to me that was pretty much out of my control, and I made the most of it, I was actually able to get some really good data, and I think Monk actually has a lot of potential moving forward, and I said that earlier in the show. So yeah, that was one thing that I learned the hard way and was glad for.
That's kind of awesome. That's kind of a success story. More than
yeah. Yeah, these aren't usually success stories.
Oh, I'm sorry. No, that's awesome.
Normally, no, that's all good.
Like, normally it's me like doing, you know, not having the right gear on or not being in the right stance or whatever on a boss. Yeah. That's funny. I don't have anything in particular. I tanked on my druid last week. That's something I learned the hard way. challenged me to do it and paid me a good chunk of change, and so I did it, and we did fine.
I don't know if I learned this so much the hard way, but it was definitely evident last week that my DPS level drops the higher my bourbon level gets. So I don't know if I necessarily learned that the hard way, but definitely learned that last week looking at the logs. It's like, why? What happened? As the night went on, my DPS kept getting lower.
Well, you didn't fall asleep during raid. So.
No, that was all good. All good.
No, technically, okay, it's all good.
No, I was never away from a keyboard. I was there the whole time. All good.
I one time had a guy at 7 a.m. And in the morning, this was in the first mobile that I played, I had a guy literally fall asleep between when we started the game and when, like, we loaded into it, and he was just AFK the whole game, and I heard him snoring through the headset. He was just out. Yeah. Played through the night. It was great.
That's funny.
That's great.
Good stuff. Yeah, who does that fall asleep at the keyboard? My God.
Well, it was like 8 or 9 in the morning his time.
It might have happened once. One time.
He's admitting it.
Huh? I admit to nothing. I just said it might have happened one time. Actually, no, all I remember is that all my friends kicked me out of their group. That's all I remember. Okay, let's do this.
Hey, don't matter what you're out of town. He's got some shit else to send over. Oh, so let's turn it all around. And scoot in a little bit closer. I just want to use and love tonight. Oh, I don't want to lose and love tonight.
All right, and love the scenery, of course, to our guildies over at Had One Job on the Deathwing server. As well as our raid team, Team Crabdick, really looking forward to tomorrow evening to try some new bosses and hopefully finish Hellfire. And of course, hand love to Carl the Llama for coming on the show this evening and giving us some pointers and some tips on becoming better Heroes players. Thank you, sir.
Thank you. It was a good time. I enjoyed it.
Rob, what do you got? Or did I take it all?
You took them all.
That's all right.
Yep. Carl, thank you so much for coming on the show. I really, really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
How about you? Do you got any shout-outs or anything?
I don't know if anybody that listens to this watches Chew's stream, but last night there was some drama between me and him. Some fun drama, not like some serious drama. And I just wanted to shout out Sarcasm for backing me up with it. Maybe he's listening. But, yeah, that's it.
Awesome. I don't see a green font here.
Do I?
Oh, yep, I do. Before we wrap things up, Carl, do you want to let people know where they can like you, reach you, follow you, get in touch with you?
Yeah, sure. All of my stuff is linked together. If you find one piece, you know, you can find the rest of it. So if you find my Twitch, you can find my Twitter, etc. But twitch.tv/CarlTheLlamaHots. On Twitter, I'm Carl the Llama, or at Enoch Warnke, which you probably can't spell, so I'd suggest just going for Carl the Llama. On Facebook, also Carl the Llama. On Reddit, my username is Blue Nose Reindeer, or if you just type in Carl the Llama to the subreddit bar search thing, you should be able to find some of my posts and, you know, access it that way. I have, like, a Google Doc with just a list of all the things that I've written recently that are still up to date. And you can check those out. And that's it. The link's at my Twitch, my Twitter, everywhere. If you just read around, you'll find it.
Perfect. Yeah, we'll include those in the show posting as well.
All right. That wraps up episode 105 of The Training Dummies. You can find this and past episodes of the show on iTunes, Stitcher, and thetrainingdummies.com. So until next time.
It's advice you can trust.
Woo!
From people you shouldn't.
Woo!